mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, the solar eclipse is an event that most of us will never see again in our lifetime. If you want to capture great photos or video of it, we have tips on getting shots that will do justice to the event itself without damaging your device in the process. Also this morning, from the great resignation to the great stagnation, the latest Career Optimism Index finds a growing number of workers have become uneasy and uncertain about their job. We'll dig into the numbers. And we'll tell you what's happening with an update on April activities and events from the Findlay YMCA. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. So the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, says that one in three Americans are sleep deprived. If you are waking up this morning and you know you're still groggy eyed, it could very well be that you are among the one third of Americans, fully one third of Americans that are sleep deprived. So this may be of interest to you. It is a new viral video on TikTok by Callie Gailey. I don't know anything about Callie. I don't know where she's from. I don't know if she's... I don't know what she does for a living. I don't know if she's an influencer or if she's a sleep expert or what. But her video has nearly 2.5 million likes. She claims to have found the ultimate hack for getting a good night's sleep. And it is this. The key, she says, is right in your closet, just an ordinary sweatshirt. Kelly says she wraps the sweatshirt around her head and eyes with the sleeves around her chin. And you do this, you may look like an idiot, but she swears that she has gotten the best sleep of her life with doing this. And she may be on to something. Dr. Jessica Andrade, a board-certified physician and sleep expert, says swaddling—it's swaddling like we do for babies or even nervous puppies. You know, you swaddle them to calm them down and relax them. And she said this works on grown-ups too. The slight pressure exerted by the sweatshirt creates a cocoon-like effect, similar to a weighted blanket, and that has been shown in studies to promote relaxation and improve sleep quality for some people. And this is the same principle. Just a few things to keep in mind. Number one, make sure it's not too tight. Make sure that it doesn't make you too hot. And also make sure that it doesn't mess with your breathing, which seems to be pretty solid advice. Because if you cover up your mouth and your nose, you may get some permanent sleep, and you don't want that. But if you're having trouble sleeping, I saw that, and I thought I would point it out first thing this morning. So maybe you want to try that tomorrow night. Let me know how it goes. I don't know. It's worth a try, I guess. So the numbers are in on the women's basketball game from earlier in the week. Monday night, LSU-Iowa, rematch of last year's women's college basketball final in the Elite Eight, averaged over 12 million viewers, according to ESPN, which makes it the most watched women's college basketball game ever. Most watched women's college basketball game on record. The previous record was just under 10 million viewers, which was LSU-Iowa from last year's final. I thought it was interesting, and I watched the game, but there wasn't a lot of the trash talking that you got. You remember last year's final with all of the gestures and the back and forth between Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark? There wasn't really any of that in this. I think a lot of people expected this to get really, really chippy after last year, but it really wasn't. It was a great game, and I was happy Iowa won, not so much because I'm a Caitlin Clark fan or an Iowa fan, but because it was the Big Ten versus the SEC, and I will never, ever root for an SEC team over a Big Ten team. So I was pulling for Iowa, and I was happy with the outcome, but it was a great game. I fully did expect maybe a little chippiness, really didn't materialize. The game also is the most watched college basketball game in ESPN history for either men or women. So it was a big ratings winner for ESPN, which I thought was kind of interesting. So this, I thought, was among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. There is a festival that's going on right now in Hilo, Hawaii. It started on Sunday. It is called the Merry Monarch Festival. Started on Sunday in Hilo, Hawaii. I bring it up because it now holds the distinction of being the best cultural festival in the nation. It was nominated by a panel of experts. I love that. A panel of experts on celebrations, I guess. And voted on by USA Today readers. And the Merry Monarch Festival, which is a celebration of Hawaiian music, arts, and hula, took number one in the rankings for the best festival in the nation. I have never heard of this before, the Merry Monarch Festival. But I got to think that it's not so much the festival itself that makes it a terrific thing. It's the fact that it's in Hawaii. I mean, let's be honest, it's got a it's got a distinct advantage in that category. But anyway, I just thought it was kind of interesting. Speaking of festivals, if your name is Kyle, you are invited to the city of Kyle, Texas later this year for its next month, as a matter of fact, for the annual Kyle Fair. Calling all Kyles. Kyle, Texas wants to see you as they try to set a new record in the Guinness Book for the largest gathering of people with the same name. It is the city's second gathering of the Kyles as part of the annual Kyle Fair. Last year's event attracted 1,490 Kyles, which was, sadly, 835 Kyles shy of the record for the largest same-name gathering, which was set in 2017 when more than 2,300 people named Ivan attended an official record attempt in Bosnia. So they want to bring that record back home to the USA where it belongs. The Kyle Fair in Kyle, Texas. Anyone and everyone named Kyle invited to the gathering of the Kyles. It will be May 18th, so spread the word. I just need to point that out. Very, very important. Let's see here. What else is going on in the world? Among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Speaking of gatherings, a lot of people be gathering here in less than a week to take in the solar eclipse. And a new survey asked 1,000 Americans about their knowledge of the health risks of watching a solar eclipse. Almost one third of those in the survey were unaware that watching a solar eclipse without proper eye protection can cause permanent eye damage. Really? One-third of Americans didn't know this? I mean, how do you not know that you are not supposed to look at the eclipse without eye protection? Similarly, more than 10% of Americans mistakenly believe that an eclipse can cause natural disasters. It cannot. There will not be any major floods or earthquakes or volcano eruptions or anything like that. It's not going to change our weather patterns. It will make it much cooler for a time as the sun goes away, but it's not going to cause a massive shift in our weather patterns. But 1 in 10 Americans actually believe an eclipse can cause that. They also believe erroneously that the eclipse could cause sleep problems and even mental health issues. I'll tell you what causes me mental health issues, finding out that some Americans are apparently so misinformed on this. That causes me some stress. Anyway, survey respondents thought that wearing sunglasses and briefly looking at the sun were safe, but even a few seconds of looking at the sun, even with standard eyeglasses or sunglasses, can lead to permanent damage without any warning signs or symptoms. So, again, make sure that you have proper eye protection. People are also cautioned against peeking at the sun through their fingers or their window blinds. That does not work either. So, they're 99 cents. You can buy them for a buck or two. And some places are handing them out free. So, you have no excuse. Just go and get your... by the way, speaking of the solar eclipse, a Missouri couple is planning to celebrate their marriage during the solar eclipse on Monday. Nicolette Zangara and her husband, Paul, actually got married during the pandemic. They're already married, but they got married during the pandemic, and thus they were not able to have their families there. So, on the day of the eclipse, they will have a renewal of the vows ceremony during the eclipse while they're in the path of totality. And I thought, what a great idea that is. You actually get married during the pandemic, which is, you know, a major, major event in our lives, right? Major event in our lives. So if you want to have a sort of a redo so that your family can be there, why not have it during one of the other major events of our lives, the solar eclipse? I thought that was a clever idea. And finally, this morning, among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Obviously, there's a lot of talk about electric vehicles these days. The Biden administration wants people to give up their gas-powered cars and go electric. They want more and more electric vehicles to reduce emissions. Well, Disneyland is responding. If you have ever been to Disneyland and you have ridden the Autopia ride, those are the little cars that kids can drive along the track in the center so that they don't, you know, can't run off the road. Right, they've got them at every amusement park in the country. It's called Autopia at Disneyland, and now they are getting rid of the gas-powered cars. These are little mini cars powered by lawnmower engines, but they are sending them to the junk heap. The miniature cars of the future were originally designed in the 1960s for the theme park's Tomorrowland, but in today's world, the attraction's exhaust fumes are a constant reminder of yesterday. Disneyland plans to electrify the attraction within the next few years as part of the park's push for sustainability. So the cars, the amusement park, I think that's a that's a great idea. I mean, you got to start somewhere, right? To retire those internal combustion engines. I wonder if they're getting incentives, tax incentives for the purchase of those electric vehicles. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Wednesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, mostly cloudy today, a chance of showers, a high in the mid-40s. Rain or snow showers tonight, a low in the mid-30s. The Hancock County Sheriff's Office says a mentally disturbed individual armed with a firearm engaged deputies and officers in a standoff. It happened at an address on Redwood Drive in Riverview Terrace Mobile Home Park in Liberty Township. The Sheriff's Office said the combined efforts of deputies and Finley police officers de-escalated the situation, and the male put down the firearm and was transported for mental health assistance. Get more in the story on our website. The total solar eclipse on the afternoon of Monday, April 8th will bring a lot of traffic to Northwest Ohio, and many Blanchard Valley Health System offices and practices are adjusting their hours or having staff work remotely for part or all of the day of the eclipse to accommodate the community's needs. BVHS says while some offices are reducing their hours, Physicians Plus will be extending its hours on Sunday, April 7th. You can see the full list of BVHS office closures and changes to hours because of the eclipse in the story on our website. Since the East Palestine, Ohio train derailment in February of last year, there's been an intense focus on railroad safety.
A new federal rule was finalized, which requires major freight railroads to maintain a two-person crew on most routes. Rail unions have long opposed one-person crews because of a combination of safety and job concerns. While investigators haven't suggested the East Palestine rail crew was at fault, it should be noted that it involved a one-man crew. 11 states have already approved the two-person crew rule.
ONN's Jay Fox reporting. The Hancock Historical Museum will present a lavender tea party for children ages 5 to 12 with an accompanying adult on Saturday, April 13th. Highlighting historical uses and benefits of lavender in the Victorian era, guests will learn proper Victorian tea party etiquette while enjoying tea, treats, and activities. Get more details in the story on our website. And remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Well, it is still a little early to know exactly what kind of show we're going to get on Monday. The forecast keeps changing. For a while, it looked like we were going to have perfect weather to see the eclipse. And now, they're saying Monday may be overcast and we might even get a little bit of rain. But then again, they said yesterday we were going to get storms, and that never really materialized in our area. So a lot can change between now and Monday, but hopefully we'll get good weather and we can actually see this once-in-a-lifetime event because it is such a rare event for us here in Northwest Ohio, and most of us will not see another eclipse for in our lifetime. Obviously, a lot of folks are going to want to capture photos or video of the solar eclipse. How do you do that and get good shots that will do justice to the eclipse itself and do so without damaging your device in the process? Will Miller is with us here this morning, local photographer, photography enthusiast. You may know him from his work at the Courier for a number of years, also the media director for Flag City Honor Flight. So, you document all of those trips, and folks see your photos on their social media and so on and so forth. And I know a couple of weeks ago you did a presentation at the Hancock Historical Museum as they were doing their eclipse event a couple of weeks ago. So this is going to be a really cool thing to be able to capture for posterity's sake.
Well, absolutely, Chris. Like you had said, that once-in-a-lifetime kind of opportunity, especially coming through Northwest Ohio, like it's going to be here, and, the path of totality that's going to come through in southern Hancock County. We're in the epicenter of the United States, really. Mm-hmm. We're not going to see this again in our lifetime. I mean, if you're going to want to see this again, you're going to have to, get on an airplane and travel somewhere to try to take these kind of photographs or just see this kind of event.
So what's the best way to capture this? I mean, how would you advise, what advice can you give folks to get shots that they're going to look back on and ooh and ah later?
Well, most folks are going to take photos with their phones. Right. That's just kind of a given nowadays. Mm-hmm. So much photographs done on phones. If you're going to use your phone, the most important thing to remember is you still have to have a filter over your phone, whether that be, some sort of solar filter that you purchased off of Amazon or something like that, and they're widely available, or you kind of made yourself something homemade out of a pair of kind of the solar glasses, which you could most certainly do.
Yeah, I actually did this yesterday just to check and see if this would work because we have the solar glasses at home that we're going to use. And I thought, well, if I hold that over my camera's lens, will that work? And you say it's basically the same thing as a solar lens for a camera?
Yeah, I mean, the solar film that's on there is the same kind of solar film for the most part that's on most of the all the solar filters that are out there. I mean, there are some better quality ones and some stuff like that for some professional lenses and things like that, but that's going to be pretty much the same kind of type of filter material that you're going to get. But the most important thing to remember is you got to have that filter over your camera lens at any time you're going to take a photo up until the time of totality.
Okay. Because
you can still damage your camera inside your phone. You can damage your equipment there. You most certainly damage your eyes as well if you're trying to look at that and you're doing that. So you want to make sure you have that on your camera, holding it up to your camera on your phone until totality. Once totality happens, you can take that away, and you got about 3.5 minutes if you're around here to take all the photos you want without that.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that I've read is that with most devices, again, and we're talking about phones, if you zoom in to get, because the sun is going to be rather small in the sky, if you just use the regular distance, it's going to be very small. But if you zoom in, you're likely to get a lesser quality picture.
That is correct, Chris, and that's the probably the biggest thing that most people are going to do in their photos. They're going to try to go out there. They're going to try to zoom in with a typical feature where you just kind of pinch your fingers on there and kind of zoom in on there. Mm-hmm. Unless your phone has a dedicated telephoto lens, which a lot of the newer cameras do, which is great. If it has that, then obviously you can use that setting where that has a telephoto on there, which is not going to have that problem. But you are correct. It's going to degrade the quality of that photo on that phone. And it's also going to give you blurry images and things like that, just because you can't hold that phone steady enough to be able to actually take that photo. If you are going to attempt to try to do something like that with a zoomed in photo like that, you are going to get a degraded quality, but you could still get possibly a decent photo, but you're going to want to have that mounted on maybe like a little tripod or somewhere. Mm-hmm. Set your timer on your phone to do that, because you cannot hold your phone steady enough to be able to take that without shaking.
Yeah, that's a very good point. The further in that you zoom, the more shakiness you're going to get in that image as well. Same thing goes for shooting a video. If you wanted to get a video of the whole process, best way to do that is on a tripod.
Correct. Yeah, just set yourself up on a tripod. They got some very inexpensive tripod mounts. Once again, you can grab something on Amazon for $10, $12. Best Buy, maybe you can have something out there too if you want to go out and look. And you can get an inexpensive tripod at Walmart for $20, $30, something like that. And you could set up your phone on that tripod to do a video, and you're going to get a much clearer, more quality video or photo doing that way on that, just because you can't hold it steady enough yourself.
So a couple of other things that I have read and I want to get your thoughts on. Some phones will allow you to adjust the image quality or the size of the photo. Obviously, you want the highest setting for something like this.
That's correct. So, I mean, you want to do the highest setting on your phone. Probably the biggest faux pas really with phone photographs is you can take a very great high quality image on your phone, but most phone images they look really good on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
You could probably print an 8x10 and they'll look okay. If you try to go much larger than that, your image just isn't going to be there, because the sensors in the phones just, they're not equipped to take that photo and get the amount of data that it takes to make the large photos like that. So if you just wanted to do something where you want to show it out on social media or maybe print yourself a nice 8x10 to put on your wall, you could get a very nice quality image. And I've taken several with my phone and have that. But, you try to go much larger than that and zoom in, it's very difficult to get really quality images.
That's when you are looking at an actual camera to shoot your photograph. Now, for those who still have cameras, what can you suggest in terms of ways to get the best photos with a traditional camera?
The best photos you're going to get with that traditional camera is also, get that on that tripod. And you're going to want to figure out what type of photo you're going to want to take. Are you going to want to try to take a little bit wider angle shot where you're going to try to get more of that? You're probably, your standard size lens, about a 200 millimeter lens, is about a minimum size that you're going to want to get to try to get the photo.
Okay.
You can also use a teleconverter on your lenses to make that lens, say if it's a 200 millimeter, that would be then a 400 millimeter lens. You know, anything above about 2000 millimeters, you can't really get the sun in the photo. But up in, you know, anywhere in between there, you can get a really nice close-in photo of that. But the two biggest things is, you know, obviously put that on the tripod. And also, if you're doing a regular kind of photo, you're going to want to get a remote shutter release, something that you hold in your hand, that it hooks into your camera. You're going to hit the button and you're not going to touch your camera for the same reason,
as with your phone, you'll end up shaking it. You'll get a blurry, photo. You want to make sure that you have the proper settings. Now, again, on regular cameras, there are a number of different settings that you may or may not have on your cell phone camera. What are going to be the ideal settings for this?
Well, in most of the cases, most of your f-stops are going to be just fine no matter how you shoot.
Okay.
In the solar eclipse portion of it, because the sun is so bright. When you actually have that filter on, you know, if you're into that F8 or even higher than that, you're okay because, you know, the sun is so bright, even with the filter on, you're still going to be just fine with that sort of F-stop there. Mm-hmm. Now, when you get into totality and some stuff like that, I mean, you're going to want to take a look at some different, you know, camera settings as far as, you know, maybe where the F-stop is. Maybe you're going to need to set that F-stop a little bit lower. But there's just some things that you're going to have to practice with on your camera and what you're comfortable with taking on that photo. There's a lot of guides out there online that you can kind of go to that'll give you an opinion here or an opinion there of where exactly the best setting is. Mm-hmm. You know, but, you know, it's just going to all depend on what kind of equipment that you're running and that sort of stuff. And also, it's going to depend on what your focal length on your lens is, too. If you're going to use a more of a telephoto on that versus a wide angle, it's going to be a little bit different on how you want to do your f-stops or your exposure. The biggest thing that most people are going to do is they're going to overexpose their photos you know, because the sun is so bright. So the recommendation is just make sure you take all your photos on the highest setting, which is raw in most cameras. And if you do that in the raw setting on most cameras, you can adjust that a much easier later on.
That's again, for some phones actually have that setting as well. You can take a raw photo rather than converting that internally to a JPEG or some sort of lossy type of format. So something you might want to investigate there as well. And that also makes it easier to adjust the colors, as you were saying, and adjust the zoom, like using Photoshop or something like that later on.
Right. That raw image is basically going to take the raw data right out of your camera. It's not going to adjust it or
process
that photo at all. So you're going to be able to get a little bit easier to do some post-production in your photos of how you want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But most of your photos, if you're using the right solar filter on there, you're going to get some pretty amazing shots of that partial eclipse and then up into totality. You know, just kind of you're gonna have 3.5 minutes, so you have plenty of time to take a lot of photos.
Yeah.
And you may need to just adjust your camera settings back and forth a little bit to see what's looking best on your screen. The other thing is you're gonna want to shoot everything in live view. Do not look through your optical viewfinder, especially during up until totality. When totality happens, you can.
Right.
But I still find it easier to use the live view on there.
So, bottom line, biggest tips. Number one, you got to have the solar filter, or else you're going to ruin your equipment. Get a tripod so that you're not getting shaky photos. It probably is a good idea to know how to adjust all of those settings quickly on the fly, because you're only going to have so much time to take different photos with different settings. And the highest quality, the raw photo, if you can get it. And also, turn off your automatic flash.
That's correct, especially on those cell phones. Make sure the flash is off on there. And most folks are going to shoot with the DSLR. You're not going to have that problem with the flash because you're not going to have it on. But
right.
But yeah, if you take a photo with the flash, you're going to have a little bit of an interesting photo on the phone for sure.
You don't need it. You don't want it. You don't need it. Really good stuff. Again, Will Miller with us this morning. Share some tips on how to photograph the eclipse and come up with shots that are worthy of this once in a lifetime event. Well, thanks very much for the insight. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris.
So over the past couple, 3 years, as we were enduring and then coming out of the pandemic, newly empowered workers were feeling pretty good about the labor market and their place in it. But as things have gradually shifted back closer to pre-pandemic normal, and with continued uncertainty about inflation, rising interest rates, and economic uncertainty in general, how do workers feel now? According to the just-released Career Optimism Index survey from the University of Phoenix, more than half of Americans are uneasy about their current employment situation. Dr. John Woods is with us. He is provost and chief academic officer at the University of Phoenix, and you call it the great talent stagnation is where we're at now.
Yeah, that's right, Chris. The Career Optimism Index is something we've been doing for 4 years now, and we do see a shift this year. We themed it in previous years a little bit differently, where workers felt a bit more empowered, a little bit more mobile. The Great Resignation theme represented their willingness to move from one job to the next, to even leave a job readily without having a next job lined up. Well, today, in the results that we're looking at for this year's index, the tide has turned a little bit, where employers are not hiring quite as much. As a result, there aren't quite as many jobs to jump into. Workers, as you said, are feeling a little bit uneasy. They feel at 53% easily replaceable. And employers are concerned as well. They're reporting that it takes them a month or more to fill an open position. In a majority of cases, that's what employers are telling us. They're looking for workers who have the right skills to do jobs and having a difficult time finding that talent.
So I thought that was kind of interesting, because one of the narratives over the past several years post-pandemic has been that this has been an employee's market. The job market has been very favorable to employees and so on. And now, as you say, that appears to be shifting. You would think that that would be good for employers, but as you alluded to, they also are concerned about this stagnation in their workforce.
Yeah, there's a real bottom line problem here for employers. The combination of productivity losses and turnover, and even the degree to which their workers feel engaged and supported, which drives up, if they're not feeling good at work, it'll drive up their healthcare costs. This is a greater than $8,000 a year a problem for organizations in terms of, if they solve for these things, that can drop straight to the bottom line, $8,000 or more per worker per year. It's a $1.35 trillion problem if you add it up across the entire workforce.
So from the employer standpoint, then, what can an employer do to combat this stagnation within their existing workforce? Is it just a matter of reassuring people that their jobs are not in jeopardy?
Well, the responsibility falls on both the employer and the employee. First, on the employer, there's some clear things that the survey indicates are needed. One is making opportunities for professional development and upskilling and training more readily available to their workers, and communicating when they're available. Some of them already offer all these things, but they're just not well enough understood by employees as being available. The second one is creating upward mobility for existing workers within their organization by having career pathing conversations, a greater, more proactive approach to mentoring their employees and developing them into these new roles to fill those open positions within their organization.
Making sure that the stagnation that employees feel is not real, that they know that they actually have opportunities for advancement. And then, as you mentioned, employees have work to do here. What can employees do to combat this feeling of stagnation in their current role?
Yeah, great, Chris. With a number of employers indicating that they already do these things, one of the things employees can do is pay greater attention to their availability, take greater advantage of them when they are offered. So be real proactive in having conversations with your manager or your boss or somebody in the organization who might serve as a mentor and help you work towards growth within the organization. So paying attention to what's available in terms of upskilling, training, development, mentorship, and then actually seizing those opportunities, being very proactive in participating in those things. I mentioned a bottom line for the employer. There's also a bottom line for the worker. The worker who does these things is more happy, more engaged, and can realize annual salary increases on average of over $5,000 a year by being more engaged in these ways. And in fact, the silver lining here is that 75% of workers acknowledge that ongoing learning and development is important, and they're willing to do that.
Real quickly, anything else from this year's Career Optimism Index that stood out in particular to you?
Yeah, more than a third of workers say that the opportunities for mobility do exist. So that's a positive. The difference there is that more than two-thirds of employers said that was the case. And so, again, bridging those gaps in communication between what is and what is perceived is really important. And as I said, real hard numbers behind the survey this year. In terms of the economic benefits to organizations that do a better job with this. One thing I think stood out was that employers report more than a month to fill an open position. And I think probably what's needed is a greater balance between looking internally at talent and looking externally for new people. And doing that a little bit better, I think, would solve some of this.
Again, Dr. John Woods is Provost and Chief Academic Officer at the University of Phoenix, out with their latest Career Optimism Index study. You've got this online if folks want to take a closer look.
We do, yes. We look at the data by certain cities. We look at it by different industries. And the full set of data, I think, has an awful lot of great information in it for folks, both workers and employers. It can be found at phoenix.edu/career-institute.
Dr. Woods, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks. Enjoyed chatting with you today.
You're listening to Good Morning on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Now, this is a very unusual theft. And when I first saw this, I actually thought it was more unusual than it turns out to be. The lead line of the story, a suspect is in jail in Memphis, Tennessee, for allegedly stealing tires from train cars. And initially when I read that, I thought, somebody stole the wheels off of train cars? Apparently, police were called early Monday morning for two individuals who were breaking into boxcars at a CSX railroad in North Memphis, unloading automobile tires from the boxcars. Police were able to stop a truck loaded with tires fleeing the scene. They put the driver under arrest. Pierre Smith now facing charges related to the theft. A second suspect driving a white cargo van has yet to be located. So you could put out stop sticks, but flattening his tires probably won't work because he's got plenty of replacements. At first I saw that and I thought, they were stealing wheels from train cars? No, they were stealing the tires off of the train cars. Still very unusual. I would think that there would be an easier way to do that. Let's see here. This is... there are a couple of things that make me wonder about this story. A man in St. Petersburg, Florida, who tattooed the logo of the Waffle House restaurant on his calf has now pleaded no contest to a theft charge for refusing to pay the tattoo artist the $250 that he owed him for the ink. Max Krajakant, age 33, had the work done at the Ink Gods Parlor in St. Petersburg back in December, but refused to pay. He reportedly had been drinking the night he got the tattoo, and when it came to pay the $250 bill, it turned out he only had $6. Which may be enough at the Waffle House, but not enough to get a Waffle House tattoo. Judges ordered Mr. Krajakant to pay a total of $675 in fines, court costs, and other fees. so many things about this story piqued my interest. First of all, why would you get a Waffle House? I understand he was inebriated, but why would you get a Waffle House tattoo? If I'm the tattoo artist and somebody goes, I want the Waffle House tattoo right here on my calf, that may be the first indication that maybe this person is a little intoxicated and you should just step back. Secondly, I would think if I were a tattoo artist, especially when you've got a customer who may or may not have all of his faculties about him, you might want to get paid up front. Because it's not like something you can take back if they can't pay. You can't repossess the tattoo. You definitely should get paid up front for something like that. But Waffle House tattoo. He certainly has a story. And I'm sure that were he to go to jail for not paying, he would be very popular in the slammer with that tattoo. I'm sure. let's see. This is kind of interesting. In Mobile, Alabama, 35-year-old Tierra Takora Hill is in trouble after a cop discovered more than 4 pounds of cocaine in a 3-year-old child's book bag. 4 pounds of cocaine. According to the news report, a tip was given to police that the child's mother, Ms. Hill, was stashing drugs in her home. Police followed her after she left the house, pulling her over for a traffic stop. They found 3.3 pounds of cocaine, a small amount of pot, and a handgun. When police went and searched the home, they found 4 unattended children between the ages of 3 and 15, about 4.5 pounds of coke in the child's bag, and another 2+ pounds in another bag, and a second firearm. In what I believe is a related story, Ms. Tierra Takora Hill of Mobile, Alabama, is no longer in the running for Mom of the Year. no longer eligible for that award. She is not Mom of the Year, no. I mean, come on. 4 pounds of cocaine in a 3-year-old child's book bag, that's too heavy for the kid. It's just too heavy. Here's how you know someone has far too much money. Anthony Jabin, I think is how you pronounce it, J-A-B-I-N. Anthony Jabin is a tech investor in Beverly Hills and apparently has always dreamt of sleeping next to Marilyn Monroe. And he has attempted to ensure that this would happen by placing a $195,000 bid on the mausoleum crypt next to Marilyn. $195,000 he wants to pay for the crypt in the mausoleum next to Marilyn Monroe. However, instead of being right next to her, it turns out the crypt is 1 row above and 4 spaces to the left. And that's what $195,000 gets you in Hollywood. I tell you what, it's the cost of living is crazy, and so is the cost of dying, apparently. Marilyn Monroe, located at the Pierce Brother Westwood Village Memorial Park and Mortuary in Los Angeles. That's how you know you have too much money, when you can spend $195,000 on a crypt next to Marilyn Monroe. But, on the other hand, how American is that to sell mausoleum crypts next to celebrities to the highest bidder? I mean, only in America would we be doing this. And finally, in the broken news this morning, try explaining this to your insurance company. A large 2-pound object that crashed through a Florida man's roof is being analyzed to determine if it came from the International Space Station. Alejandro Otero said something crashed through the roof of his home at 2:34 in the afternoon on March 8th, and the sound was caught and recorded by his Ring security camera. According to news reports, U.S. Space Command recorded the re-entry of a piece of debris from the International Space Station right around the same time over the Gulf of Mexico, with a trajectory taking it right towards southwest Florida. Apparently, Mr. Otero's son was home at the time, but fortunately was not injured. NASA is investigating to see if this was indeed a piece of the International Space Station. How do you make that call to your insurance company for that repair? I had something fall off the International Space Station through the roof of my home. Yes. Explain that to the insurance adjuster. Yeah, sure you did. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Do you know an exceptional teacher who's made a positive impact in your life or the life of a student? It's time to shine a bright spotlight on these educational heroes with the Findlay Rotary Golden Apple Awards. Nominate your favorite teacher from Findlay or Hancock County online at findlayrotary.org before April 5th. Nominate an outstanding educator for the Golden Apple Awards. Make a difference. Honor a teacher by visiting findlayrotary.org today. This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. This is spring and summer travel season coming up here. And if you are planning a road trip or a larger vacation, obviously you want to do a lot of research. It is a lot of budgeting. It's a big expense. And not all tourist destinations are worth the cost. So to help you plan your spring or summer vacation, the folks at StudyFinds.org did a deep dive into the reviews on the top 10 travel and tourism sites to compile a list of the most overrated tourist attractions in the U.S. They have seven of them on the list, and some might surprise you. Number one, Mount Rushmore. I say there's actually not a lot to do at Mount Rushmore, and it is smaller than you might think. So if you're going to Mount Rushmore, make it just a part of a larger trip to the Badlands and so on. Don't make that the one stop that you do. So Mount Rushmore, just a part of a larger trip rather than a destination unto itself. Las Vegas, they say, is overrated. Not the place to go if you want to relax, for sure. Plymouth Rock, obviously a very important site for American history, colonial history, but it's a rock. Plymouth Rock is a little overrated. Times Square makes their overrated list. They say it's basically a busy intersection in a major city with a lot of neon and some very strange people. More than it's less than it's actually made out to be. Lombard Street in San Francisco, that's the big windy street that everyone wants to drive down. You see the pictures of it all the time. Problem is, there are like 350 cars a minute trying to drive down Lombard Street. You can get traffic jams on a city winding street. You know, not that big of a deal, as it turns out. Same thing with the Hollywood Walk of Fame. It sounds really cool, but basically it's a sidewalk, and it's not in a great part of the city. And lastly on their list, number seven, Bourbon Street in New Orleans, which, again, for a lot of people might think a bucket list type of thing, but basically it's just flashing neon signs, tacky bars, and tipsy tourists. So some places you might want to think twice before visiting as the most overrated tourist sites in the U.S. Want to get an update on some of the April activities and events, the Findlay YMCA. Andrea Sertel is here from the YMCA, Healthy Living Director at the Y. And first of all, I want to mention, because we've talked about this in the past, some of the upgrades, changes at the East Branch, most notably 24/7 access, big ribbon cutting tomorrow. There for that at 4 o'clock. So if you want to be part of the fun or the East Branch, but the big event in the month of April is the Healthy Kids Day that you have coming up on what, the 12th. So next week.
Yep. Friday, April 12th, it's from 5 to 8 at the University of Findlay. It's in the Kaler Center. For over 30 years, the YMCAs and communities have hosted free community events aimed to inspire kids and families to keep their minds and bodies active throughout the summer. And this year, we're just excited again just to have a lot of activities and events and different vendors that have come in, community groups that have wanted to share in this free event for families and their children.
So this has been done, as you said, a number of years. We've had these, I mean, save for the pandemic, when things looked very different for everyone. But this has been an annual thing for a number of years, partnering with the University of Findlay to do this at the Kaler Center.
Yes. So we partner, we're so thankful to partner with the university. The Blanchard Valley has also given us tremendous help, as well as our Hancock Public Health. So we've all come together just to create a real nice event for the children and their families.
And as you mentioned, there'll be a lot of activities. Mm-hmm. Tell us what's going to be going on here.
Okay, so a couple of things. We're going to have some mini exercise classes, like some rumble, and that is kind of like a martial arts. We're going to also be bringing in mini trampolines, so kids can have different...
What kid doesn't like trampolines?
I know, exactly. I mean, that was a huge hit last year, so we're really excited to bring that back. We're also having several athletic groups from the university. They're going to have different skills and drills. And we're also going to have an obstacle course, and then just other resources, like I said, for the health and wellness of children and their families. Resources just to say, hey, this is around town and this is what you have access to.
Such as, I mean, I don't mean to put you on the spot, and you probably don't have all of them you know, committed to memory, but some of the ones that will be there would include what?
Oh, just different. Challenge Champions is actually going to be there. Hancock Public Health is bringing on some kind of like a walkthrough of a nurse's doctor's office. So that'll be great. There's always just an amazing just event that is put on.
And this is open to all families. Don't have to be a Y member.
No, do not have to be a Y member. Do not have to register. You will register when you come in. Mm-hmm. And that's just to give us a little bit of information. We do have door prizes available. We will be giving away free shirts, water bottles, and other giveaways with that chance, like I said, for those raffles. At the beginning, we also have a bounce house and a Gaga ball pit. So those are big.
Again,
those bring the kids.
A big hit, I'm sure. The idea, as you mentioned, is to get kids active.
Yes.
And I know that's always the big concern, especially once we get into the months, because it's right around the corner where the kids are going to be out of school and they're going to have an awful lot of time on their hands. Trying to keep them active, you know, through the summer is something that is going to benefit the kids long term.
Yes.
Do folks need to sign up or anything like that for this?
They can just show up to the university, and they'll, like I said, they'll have a little bit of paperwork to do just to say who they are, just to get some general information. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if they want to sign up for those raffles and giveaways, we need some information just to get a hold of them.
Yeah. So give us all of the details. We mentioned it is next Friday the 12th.
Next Friday the 12th. Mm-hmm. It starts at 5 and it goes to 8 p.m. Again, it's at the Kaler Center at the University of Findlay. So where the, you know, if you're around my age, you'll remember the old skating rink.
Now, what ages is this geared for?
Oh, goodness. We have seen anywhere from... I want to say 2 or 3 years old, all the way up to 18, really.
Okay, so kids of all ages.
Yeah, and just because we do have the information and just the community resources for the wellness of the kids, is targeted at a wider range, you know.
And more information available on programs at the Y. Again, this is open for everyone, but there will be information on programs that are going on. Because there are always, that's another thing that we should mention, always things going on at the Y.
We always have
for
things.
For all ages.
Yes. Throughout the year, you know, we have multiple sports seasons going on. Mm-hmm. We have youth fitness classes going on. We go with music classes and art classes for the little ones. So we're always trying to get them involved, either whether it's physically or more mentally, just for the wellness of the child and of the person as a whole.
Yeah. We've got more information on it linked up at our webpage, goodmornings.net, if you want more details on the 2024 Healthy Kids Day coming up next Friday. Again, if folks want more information on any of the other programs that are going on at the Y for their kids, and I know we're going to be getting into camp season here before too long, so, you know, there are things, information there on the website about that too, right?
Finley YMCA, FinleyYMCA.com.
Easy.
I just got so excited.
Easy for you to say.
Yes.
Again, goodmornings.net. We have that link up there as well. Andrea Sertel, a healthy living director at the Finley YMCA. Andrea, thanks very much for coming by. We appreciate it. And with that, we will put a wrap on another edition of the podcast. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. That's our little corner of the World Wide Web. Coming up tomorrow on the program, the Backyard Mission Trip is back. It takes an army of hardworking volunteers to pull it off, but it's a day you won't soon forget. We'll have details. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. Catch you back here tomorrow.